So, last week, Simon started us off on our Lent sermon series, getting us to think about how God created a good and beautiful world, and how we can play our part in caring for God's creation. And today our focus is on light and energy. You might have just detected that theme of light from those scriptures that we've just had read. Those scriptures, of course, speak of how light features in the Bible, how it's foundational to creation, and how Christ Jesus, the living Word, is described as light. Indeed, Jesus himself, the firstborn of all creation, the one through whom all heaven and earth were created, says of himself, "I am the light of the world." And I looked in one of those readings, sorry, this is an aside, but it just struck me this morning. I looked in one of those readings how the Israelites, when darkness came on Egypt, had light where they were. The light of God's presence. Isn't that amazing? I don't know about you, but it feels to me as though something has shifted in public opinion around the world about the urgency of us needing to act to reduce global warming. And I guess it's partly perhaps because we're starting to experience and to see some of the things that the scientists have been saying for a long time will happen if the world continues to warm at the rate that it is doing. And so we're starting to become aware that if we don't act, the consequences will be severe. I'm therefore delighted that the General Synod of the Church of England has just, in the last couple of weeks, voted to make the Church of England carbon neutral by 2030. An ambitious target, especially when you think about big buildings like this with their lack of insulation, but arguably necessary because of the urgency of the crisis facing us. And of course, as a parish, we're going to have to think very carefully about how we are going to play our part in enabling that to happen. This week, the courts ruled that the building of a third runway at Heathrow is unlawful because the government hasn't taken into consideration its policies about being carbon neutral by 2050. It seems likely that a similar ruling may well follow regarding the government's intention to invest heavily in road infrastructure. We're at a crunch point as a nation in terms of what we do about global warming. We can't just carry on as we are. Of course, as a developed nation, we have become very dependent upon the production of vast amounts of energy to enable our economy to function and so to keep us in the manner to which we have become accustomed. Paul was just commenting when he sat next to me here how it was a bit chilly in here this morning, so I went and turned the thermostat up a little bit, and I was just thinking, oh, perhaps I shouldn't have done it, but I should turn it down a little bit and use a bit less energy. The government is facing a dilemma. How do they deliver what people seem to want? How do we give what the economy needs, more and more energy, whilst at the same time making radical reductions in our carbon footprint? And this dilemma, of course, exists in our lives too. Many of us want the convenience of owning and driving our own cars. Perhaps we can't afford yet, or perhaps it's not very practical yet, to invest in electric or hybrid vehicles. Many of us want to be able to explore the wonderful and beautiful world that we live in, and so enjoy our foreign holidays. And yet we know that most forms of travel are polluting and damaging the environment. And even if we were to cut out all our travel, we still need light and energy to heat and power our homes. And with our food, what about all those air miles involved in stocking our supermarkets and giving us convenience and choice in what we buy? I don't know about you, but if you're anything like me, you probably feel fairly quickly overwhelmed when you think about the scale of all this. The problem is so big and complex, it's difficult to know where to start. And some of the potential changes that we need to make are probably not very palatable, or they might not be very practical in terms of how we currently live our lives. So if you're anything like me, you might just end up doing very little, carrying on in the hope that somehow government policy or new technology will solve the problem for us. And of course, we're Christians. We're followers of Jesus. So it's important that we ask the question, what does our faith teach us about this? What guidance does our faith give? Well, the Bible begins by telling us that God created a good world. The Nicene Creed begins, "We believe in one God, the Father, the Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, of all that is, seen and unseen." So our starting point must surely be that God made, loves and cares about his creation. That he sees it as good. And that therefore he doesn't want it exploiting and spoiling. And he doesn't want human beings created in his image suffering because of creation being abused. Particularly if that means that it's the poorest and most vulnerable peoples and nations that bear the brunt of that suffering. And of course, natural justice and our own consciences, if we let them, will surely tell us that if our lifestyles can only be sustained at the cost and suffering of others, then actually it's our lifestyles that need to change. Secondly, we see in the creation account that light is the foundation of life, the essential building block, created on the first day, emanating from the Word and the Spirit of God. And of course, as human beings, we are in fact completely dependent upon light. We need it to grow our food, to give us vitamin D, to keep our bones healthy and strong. We need it to maintain our body clock, to tell us when to be awake and when to be asleep. We need it to send images of things around us to our brains so that our eyes can see, so we can bump into things. And of course, without light, there is no colour. While we will not see God face to face until Jesus comes again, light enables us to perceive the world that God has created. Light enables us to be able to observe what God observed, which is that creation is good. And of course, in observing creation, we see something of God's greatness and beauty. And moreover, it's not just us humans that respond to light. I'm told that deciduous trees seem to be able to count the number of warm days there are until it's safe enough for them to start growing new leaves. But warm days aren't enough. Trees also need light too. So did you know that beech trees, for example, begin their growth once there has been light for at least 13 hours a day? We see something similar in birds. They respond to light in their breeding habits, needing the days to have a certain number of hours of sunlight before hormones start to kick in and the breeding process begins. And of course, as humans, we don't even perceive all of light in the way that some of the creatures do. So, some animals use ultraviolet light, which reveals whole areas of living and being that by nature are inaccessible to us. So, for example, kestrels use ultraviolet light to find their prey. Voles mark their runways through fields in a way that is visible only to ultraviolet light. And so on, and so on, and so on. God saw that light was good. And he separated the light from the darkness. God calls the light day. And the darkness he called night. But of course, with the invention of electricity, we've blurred the boundaries between light and darkness. Electricity is hugely important in our world today. But we know that our dependence on fossil fuels has played a large part in causing the climate emergency that we're now facing. And yet, the provision of light and electricity has also brought incredible benefits. It's made a massive difference to the quality of life for those of us fortunate to live in countries where it's readily and reliably available. Electricity has the power to transform lives and communities. The need, therefore, is for us to find affordable and clean energy. And of course, this aim has been identified as one of the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations. Access to light and energy, light and electricity is hugely important to the well-being of humanity. And yet some 840 million people still today live without electricity. In sub-Saharan Africa, 56% of the population do not have access to electricity. And this is really important because people need access to electricity in order to get themselves out of poverty. But we know from science that electricity, the energy that we use, needs to be clean and renewable. We know that clearly from science. But actually, I would argue that we also know it from what our faith teaches us about caring for God's creation. Our faith teaches us that the God we worship is the Creator, and that we are His children, and that as His children we are stewards of the creation that He has created. In other words, we have a responsibility to look after what He's given us. So that perhaps raises the question for us as to why so many Christians don't seem to take that responsibility as seriously as they could or should. I ask myself, why don't I take that responsibility as seriously as I could? I invite you to ask yourself the question, are you taking that responsibility as seriously as you could? In her book, Saying Yes to Life, Ruth Valerio makes the point that, and I quote, "If we neglect the doctrine of creation in our churches and in our own thinking, it is often because we have developed an understanding of salvation that does not hold salvation and creation together." I think she makes a very, very astute and valid point. If we neglect the doctrine of creation in our churches and in our own thinking, it is often because we have developed an understanding of salvation that does not hold salvation and creation together. Today is the first Sunday of Lent. And Lent is a time when traditionally we focus particularly on Jesus' death and resurrection and on the redemption that he has won for us. Our lives as followers of Jesus are built on the salvation that is ours because of what Jesus did for our sakes. And all this is good. But the danger is that our focus on personal salvation and our focus on how one day there'll be a new heaven and a new earth The danger is that if our focus is on just that personal salvation, personal redemption, and how we might just kind of hope that somehow God is going to make it all right in the new heaven and the new earth, then the danger is that actually we fail to recognise that actually God has a role for us as stewards of the creation that he has created, and how that's a fundamental and important part of our vocation as God's people. And so, as Ruth Valerio puts her finger on, too often in our theological thinking, the doctrine of creation is divorced from the doctrine of redemption. Ruth Valerio goes on, the redemption that we anticipate eagerly as we go through Lent is not one that takes us away from creation, but the one that will root us more deeply in it, as we find there the light and life of God. Such a good point, or an important point. That actually the growth of our spirituality, of our personal devotion, should not take us away from creation and the world that God has given us to live in and to minister in and to work in. But actually should make us more part of it, more in touch with it. I think we often have this idea that holiness is about somehow removing ourselves from the world and keeping ourselves uncontaminated and clean away from the world, and then we'll be holy. Go and live in a monastery or something, and then you can be really holy. But that's not the biblical understanding of holiness. Because God is holy, and God came in human form and fully incarnated himself into the messiness and the depravity and the dirt and the brokenness and the sinfulness of the world. Holiness causes us to engage more fully with the world and with the needs of the world and with the environmental challenges that we face as a world. In the verses from Colossians that we heard read earlier, the Apostle Paul makes a startling statement that Christ's blood was shed on the cross to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven. In fact, that phrase, all things, comes about 4 times in that passage. To reconcile all things to himself. Many of us are used to seeing Christ's work on the cross as being focused on reconciling people to God. But Paul here makes it clear that our understanding of salvation needs to include all things, all of creation, not just human beings. The God who created the world is the same God who redeems us and the whole of his creation through Jesus Christ. As God spoke the world into being, so Jesus is the Word, who was there at the beginning, the one through whom all things were created. So, we've been thinking about the fact that there is a danger in our churches that we focus on the God of salvation and we forget the God of creation. I wonder if this is something that you recognise in your own thinking and in the way that we put our emphasis in our preaching and our teaching and our church life. I guess this Lent and our desire to look at how we care for God's creation, and as we think about the thoughts stimulated by Ruth Valerio, this Lent we're thinking about the climate crisis that is facing the planet and humanity. And I hope thinking more deeply about how our faith has something to teach us here. It's been there all the time, but perhaps just our theology hasn't enabled us to see the link as close as it is. So it's actually this Lent we might learn to hold together the doctrine of God as creator with the doctrine of redemption. And actually, if we're able to do that, if we're able to see that actually our salvation is not just about our individual personal salvation as human beings, but actually is about the salvation of the whole of the cosmos, then perhaps that might enable us this Lent to turn our attention more outwards. And perhaps it might give us the motivation and the challenge and the stimulation to make changes in the way that we live, in order that we might be better at caring for God's creation. Amen.